This is VOA News. I'm Victor Beatty. President Donald Trump and wife Melania paid solemn tribute Tuesday to the 11 people killed Saturday at the Tree of Life Jewish Temple in Pittsburgh. The Trumps lit candles for each of the victims inside before stepping outside to leave remembrances. They also visited some of the wounded recovering at the University of Pittsburgh Medical Center. Protesters were also in evidence in the city during the visit, including Kathy Wolf, who lives across the street from the synagogue.
I think the president's visit was very much a distraction. I think it detracts from our ability as a neighborhood to go and mourn, right? We've been doing that for a couple days now, and all of a sudden, because the president wants to come, you have to close the streets and nobody else can come. We had funerals today, and we would like to go back to mourning.
The first of those funerals for the victims of Saturday's attack were held Tuesday. 80-year-old Holocaust survivor Judith Samet has attended the temple in Pittsburgh for 54 years and escaped death for a second time because he was late arriving that fateful morning.
You know, you get used to everything. You were in Bergen-Belsen, and every day was the same. People were actually lying down and dying because they lost hope. My mother-in-law used to say, you can get used to everything, even hanging.
The suspect, Robert Bowers, was arrested at the scene, and after being wounded, he's been charged with 29 felony counts, including hate crimes, and could face the death penalty if convicted. Nigerian police clashed with supporters of an imprisoned Shia cleric in Abuja for a second day Tuesday, after authorities claimed three were killed Monday. Members of the Islamic Movement of Nigeria said that at least 24 were actually killed. Protester Abdullahi Mohammed was a witness.
The police, they blocked the way. They started shooting tear gas, and they used bullets. So many people we are confirmed dead now.
They're demanding the release of their leader, Ibrahim Zakzaki. This is VOA News. The general in charge of the deployment of thousands of troops along the U.S. southern border said he expects more will be involved as at least two separate caravans of thousands of mostly Central American migrants move slowly northward through Mexico toward the U.S. It's extraordinary to Georgia State University political scientist Jennifer McCoy.
In the United States, we've traditionally relied on National Guard for any kind of internal order situation. Now, this is at the border, people seeking to cross, some of them to request asylum, which is a legal move, coming through the legal ports. Others may seek to cross outside of the legal port. I don't remember ever seeing this in my lifetime, sending troops to the border like this to stop immigrants seeking a legal entry into the country.
More than 5,200 troops are being deployed across Texas, Arizona, and California. President Donald Trump said he'll seek it by executive order to scrap so-called birthright citizenship, conferring citizenship on anyone born in the U.S., even to parents with no legal status. He appeared on the HBO documentary series Axios.
On immigration, some legal scholars believe you can get rid of birthright citizenship without changing the Constitution.
With an executive order.
Exactly.
Right.
Have you thought about that?
Yes.
Tell me more.
It was always told to me that you needed a constitutional amendment.
Right. 14th Amendment.
You don't. Number one, you don't need that. Number two,
I mean, that's in dispute.
You could definitely
that's very much in dispute.
Well, you can definitely do it with an act of Congress, but now they're saying I can do it just with an executive order.
Republican members of Congress said they'll introduce a similar piece of legislation. Denmark says it suspects Iranian agents tried to assassinate a Danish-Iranian Arab opposition leader on its soil. Copenhagen has called for fresh EU-wide sanctions against Tehran. UN Human Rights Chief Michelle Bachelet called Tuesday for international experts to investigate the murder of Saudi journalist Jamal Khashoggi in Istanbul. Ravina Shamdasani is a spokesperson.
According to Saudi Arabia itself, there are high-level officials who were involved in carrying out this crime, this shockingly brazen crime against a journalist who was a government critic. We think that it would be inadequate for Saudi Arabia alone to be carrying out this investigation, and there needs to be international involvement.
Riyadh initially denied it was involved in the killing, then acknowledged Khashoggi was murdered in a rogue operation. Turkey says it's completed preparations for a new operation in northern Syria to destroy U.S.-backed Kurdish rebels who have been fighting Islamic State jihadists. Ankara considers the Kurdish People's Protection Units terrorists. A rally on Wall Street Tuesday, which suffered sharp losses over the past 2 weeks. The benchmark Dow Jones soaring more than 430 points to 24,874. Meanwhile, U.S. consumer confidence in October hit a new 18-year high. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Botte in Washington. Today is Wednesday, October 31st, and here are some of the stories we're covering. The DRC government has provided material support to the country's Elections Commission ahead of the December 23rd election.
We gave the commission 300 lorries, 100 pickups, and 15 planes, including 7 helicopters, to help to move its materials all over the country.
Lamba Mende is DRC's information minister. A Malawi opposition party blames that country's elections commission for the case of the stolen election laptop. A civil society group appeals to SADC to intervene and end what they call Zimbabwe's social and economic decline. And Riek Machar is expected to attend today's peace celebration in Juba.
Riek Machar, the leader of the SLMSLIO, will attend the celebration of the peace tomorrow in Juba. We'll be leading a delegation from the SLMSLIO leadership.
Pogbo Baluang is the SPLMIO Director for Information and Public Relations. East African nations table a petition for farmers, and a Guinea-Bissau boxer is building a maternity center. Those stories, plus our listener of the day, are coming up on Daybreak Africa. The Democratic Republic of Congo government has given that country's Independent Electoral Commission supplies necessary for the conduct of the December 23rd presidential election. Information Minister Lambert Mende says the supplies include 300 trucks, 100 pickups, and 15 airplanes, including 7 helicopters, to help move election materials all over the country. Mende downplayed concerns that lack of security in the North Kivu and Ituri provinces has made having the election in those areas more attainable. He says if Afghanistan and Iran can have elections, then the DRC can also have its election.
We have budgeted all the expenses of the Electoral Commission, and time has come to deliver logistic support to this commission. So we gave the commission 300 lorries, 100 pickups, and 15 planes, including 7 helicopters, to help it to move its materials all over the country.
So among the materials that these trucks and the airplanes or helicopters will be delivering or distributing will be these voting machines. As you know, the opposition had a rally over the weekend protesting against the use of these voting machines.
I don't think that this is a problem to be put on discussion between politicians. This is the competence of the Electoral Commission to decide how it will organize the elections. Since it is an independent commission, anybody have to abide by the law and respect the independence of the commission. Nobody is entitled to dictate to the commission how it will work. The only duty for the government is to give to the commission any means, materials means, financial one, to provide security, and that's all. So the government has nothing to do with the technology, how the commission is working, because it is an independent body that is composed by members of the majority, of opposition, as well as civil society. People have to live with that idea that we have settled an independent body to manage elections. So whatever decision is being taken by that independent body, well, if somebody is not happy with it, he is free to challenge it to constitutional court, not to come and make lobby to press.
Minister, you just said that part of the responsibilities of the government is to provide security. I know your country is a very big country and everything cannot be right, but there are people who are still concerned that the security issue in the East may not still be ripe to have these elections.
I don't think that that is a problem. Let me record that Nigeria went to elections when Boko Haram was busy killing people in the northern part of Nigeria. What was the problem? But we have a problem in very few areas near Beni and Ituri province. Very, very few areas. These cannot forbid elections to take place. Not at all.
Lamba Mende is the Democratic Republic of Congo's information minister. You're speaking with me from the capital, Kinshasa. Malawi's opposition People's Party of former President Joyce Banda says it holds the country's Elections Commission responsible for a missing laptop used for voter registration. The country's Elections Commission said the laptop had no election information on it when it went missing. Electoral Commission Chief Executive Sam Alufandika said the focus on the missing laptop was intended to discourage voters from registering for the 2019 election. Ibrahim Mantola, Secretary General of the People's Party, says the Elections Commission is planning to steal next year's election for President Peter Mutharika and the ruling Democratic Progressive Party.
We need to raise the following questions to the Malawi Electoral Commission. First, did MEC, Malawi Electoral Commission, report the loss of the machines to police according to the law of this country? If they did, when was that reported and for how long has this machine been missing? But unfortunately, the Malawi Electoral Commission is chosen by the president, and the head of the police is chosen by the president, and the parliament only confirms the post of the inspector general. I don't see that we are going to get the good results from the Malawi Electoral Commission because they are answerable to the president, and the police also is answerable to the president. Secondly, we were not informed about the missing of the gadget as the main players in the elections. We as the political parties, we are asking the Malawi Electoral Commission to resign honorably because they have failed the process of organizing the elections.
The executive of the commission, Sam Alufandika, said that there's nothing to worry about because there was no information on this supposedly missing laptop.
James, what we are worried is that how can we know that it has not been tampered?
Mr. Mantola, I wanted to ask you about your People's Party candidate, former President Joyce Banda. Tell me, why do you think now she deserves another chance at the presidency?
First and foremost, Her Excellency Dr. Joyce Banda had a plan, the economic recovery plan. When she took over the government, we didn't have fuel, we didn't have electricity, we didn't have essential commodities in the country, we didn't have essential drugs in the hospitals. So she had the economic recovery plan. That's why we are saying that she deserves to come back and be given a chance.
Mr. Mantola, you mentioned corruption in the current government, and I want to give you a chance to specifically address the Cashgate scandal. Do you think Malawians now have forgotten or have decided to put this behind them?
It is just a mere campaign which the DPP, Democratic Progressive Party, smeared on Her Excellency Dr. Joyce Banda because she made the investigation. There was a forensic audit which was done by the Baker Tilly, a UK-based company. And the forensic audit, it mentioned the names of those who are today in the DPP, those who are surrounding the president, that these are the people who had involvement with Cashgate. She is the only president who arrested those who were involved in the Cashgate.
Ibrahim Mantola is the Secretary General of former President Joyce Banda's People's Party. You're speaking with me from Lusaka. Today is Wednesday, October 31st, and you're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voices of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Daybreak Africa time is now 14 minutes past the hour. Six members of the non-governmental organization Crisis in Zimbabwe Coalition have urged the Southern African Development Community, SADC, to intervene in Zimbabwe to end what they call serious social and economic problems, which they claim may lead to civil unrest. The group made the appeal on Tuesday when they met with Namibian President Gabe Gengo, who is the chairperson of SADC. Rashi Mahia, the chairperson of the organization, says they told the SADC president that they are worried about the skyrocketing prices of basic commodities, crippling shortages of goods and cash, and the militarization of the state.
We are in Namibia on a regional advocacy mission
where we were engaging the SADC as an institution, particularly having a meeting with the SADC chair, who is the president of Namibia. And the reason why we are here is to engage him on the situation in Zimbabwe. As a crisis of a coalition, we are convinced that there's a crisis in Zimbabwe. It's an economic crisis, a governance crisis, and particularly a crisis that is emanating from a disputed election. And from our view, there's need for national dialogue in our country so that we deal with the consequences that are coming out of a disputed election. There is a lot of mistrust. The level of mistrust and polarization in Zimbabwe makes it increasingly difficult for us to move forward as a country. So we came here to engage with the president and to engage with him on those specific issues. The state of the economy now is such that people cannot afford basic services like medication, like health, like even basics like food, like bread. The cost of bread is going up, hyperinflation. It is dangerous. It might actually lead to social unrest. And we think it is important that SADC puts Zimbabwe on the agenda.
What was his reaction to your kind of, information about Zimbabwe?
Yes, in total, he was happy that we were giving him information on the state of the economy in our country and the politics in our country. His position was clear with regards to elections, that as SADC, they can only respect the legitimate result, what they call the legitimate result, which is a product of the electoral processes and confirmed by the courts. But also he concurred with us that there was need for a conversation and a dialogue to take place within Zimbabwe for us to solve the crisis.
Rashid Mahia is the chairperson of the Crisis in Zimbabwe Coalition. He spoke from the Namibian capital, Windhoek, with Gibbs Dube of VOA Zimbabwe's service. Gibbs also spoke with ZANU-PF member Effort Nkomo, who says the Crisis in Zimbabwe Coalition is wasting its time as there is no crisis in Zimbabwe.
My reaction would be that in any situation, you have people that want to create a crisis where there is no crisis. In a country like Zimbabwe, with means and ways of solving our own problems, we don't have to run to another country. Those countries that we are running into have their own problems. We don't need to add our own problems into their own problems.
But from the look of things, Mr. Nkomo, it seems as if Zimbabwe is facing a crisis when we talk about, prices of goods and, shortages of money and all those kind of things. Are they not relating things that are really happening in Zimbabwe to the Namibian president?
No, it's a situation that's deliberately created. For instance, how do you relate to a situation where an organization or a business deliberately withdraws goods from the shelves, and tomorrow they're bringing the shelves with a different price? Who is bringing a crisis?
So in this case, are you actually accusing businesses of sabotaging the Zimbabwean economy?
Yes, that's economic sabotage. In as far as I'm concerned, if I were in power, I would really deal with economic sabotage and deal with them.
How would you deal with them?
One, if they are sincere in doing business, I would draw their licenses and get people that want to do business and give them licenses to do business.
And then in terms of the president of Namibia, do you see the president of Namibia reacting positively or negatively against what is being told by these people from Crisis in Zimbabwe Coalition?
I'm not sure because I won't speak on his behalf, but judging from the situation, I don't think he would stoop so low as to reactionaries.
So what are you saying exactly?
I'm saying people that have a situation in their country, you don't need to take your situation into your neighbor before you solve it within your own house.
Effort Nkomo is a member of Zimbabwe's ruling ZANU-PF party. He spoke from the country's second largest city, Bulawayo, with Gibbs Dube of VOA Zimbabwe's service. The Sudan People's Liberation Movement in opposition, SPLMIO, has confirmed that opposition leader Riek Machar will attend today, Wednesday's peace celebration in Juba to mark the signing of the revitalized peace agreement signed last month in Khartoum. A rebel official says Machar will lead a delegation of his political bureau, military and security officials to Juba. Dimo Silva Aurelio has more from Juba.
Speaking by phone from Khartoum, spoke, Boss Galuang, the SPLM-IO's Director for Information and Public Relations, says despite earlier indications that Riek Machar would not attend tomorrow's celebration because certain conditions of the peace deal were not being met, such as the failure to free all political prisoners, the rebel leader is expected in Juba on Wednesday.
Mr. Machar, the leader of the SPLM-IO, will attend the celebration of the peace signing tomorrow in Juba. We'll be leading a delegation from the SPLM-IO leadership, from the both militarily and politically leadership.
It is the first time Machar will be seen in Juba since July 2016, when fighting flared up around the presidential palace between Machar's bodyguards and government forces, forcing President Salva Kiir's former deputy to flee to neighboring Democratic Republic of Congo. Aside from demanding the release of all political prisoners, the SPLM-IO had wanted Juba to lift the state of emergency and allow free movement inside the country for all opposition groups, along with a guarantee of Machar's safety. Galuang says Juba has assured the SPLM-IO that Machar will be provided security during the celebrations, but he says the SPLM-IO is still demanding the release of all political leaders and activists to show the government's commitment to fully implement the peace deal.
The SPLM-IO is committed to the territorialized peace agreement, and we would like to urge the government of South Sudan to adhere to the agreement and fulfill the agreement in letter and spirit by releasing the political leaders and the prisoner of war, namely Dong Samuel, Agri Idri, and James Gadet. So we would like this celebration to be a new chapter for peace in South Sudan.
Galuang did not confirm whether or not Machar will extend his stay in Juba after the celebrations. The South Sudan government has invited several IGAD heads of state and the African Union to attend tomorrow's celebrations. South Sudan Information Minister Michael Makwei says some leaders have confirmed they will attend the event, including the presidents of Uganda and Sudan.
People we are sure about are President Museveni and President Bashir. The rest may not come, but they will still send in either their deputies or senior ministers to attend on their behalf.
Under the revitalized peace agreement signed in Khartoum, Machar will be President Salva Kiir's deputy once again after an 8-month pre-transitional period, which is scheduled to end in April 2019. Analysts have expressed concern about the level of mistrust between the two rivals, which is seen as a major obstacle to peace if the two leaders are to work together again. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Juba.
The Forum for East and Southern African Farmers has petitioned East African partner states to increase their budget allocations on agriculture. The so-called Malabo Declaration requires member states to allocate not less than 10% of their budgets on agriculture. Moses Javier Rimana reports from Arusha, Tanzania.
According to the latest figures released by the East and Southern African Forum, the budget allocation on agriculture by the six East African countries of Burundi, Rwanda, Kenya, Tanzania, South Sudan and Uganda declined significantly despite African Union's Malabo Declaration in 2014, calling for an end to hunger by 2025. In the financial year 2018-2019, all the five East African member states allocated less than 10% of the budget on agriculture, with the exception of Burundi, which allocated 10.69% despite a high malnutrition rate in the country. Hakim Baliraine is a member of the Farmers Forum from Uganda.
When you look at the malnutrition rate, you find that the country which is allocating 13%, again stunting is 56% in Burundi. So where is this budget going? Is it not reaching down there? This shows that all the East African countries, the budget allocated to the agriculture sector is not progressively increasing. Instead, it is moving downward.
The Farmers Forum is expected to present a petition to the East African Community Heads of State next month, signed by 1 million farmers, calling for the allocation of 10% national budget to the agriculture sector. In 2016, the Regional Assembly passed a resolution for the East African member states to fast-track the Malabo Declaration by putting in place financial instruments which are responsive to the needs of small-scale farmers. Martin Ngoga is the Speaker of the Regional Assembly.
When we passed this resolution, it's because we care about what farmers do. It was a signal to the leadership and the people of East Africa that there is a sector to which we needed to pay more attention, and that there are commitments we have done to which we must be in full compliance.
Despite agriculture being the major economic activity in all East African countries, accounting for more than 80% of the 150 million people, lack of funding has led to a decline of agriculture production. Matthias Kasamba is a regional lawmaker.
A study of three grains, wheat, rice, and maize, and all the six partner states, we are importing those three grains to the tune of $2 billion annually. Brazil produces soybean and exports soybean worth $25 billion. America exports soybean worth $21 billion. And when I checked on Kenya, the exports soybean worth $2,000. So this is the quagmire we are in as we, the elites and the people of East Africa.
Agriculture contributes to more than 40% of the region's GDP. And if implemented, the Malabo Declaration is also expected to reduce the poverty rate in East Africa by almost a half. Moses Havyarimana, VOA Africa, Arusha, Tanzania.
He is a successful professional boxer, and our Guinea-Bissau-born Adelino Da Costa wants to give back to his country. The boxer-turned-American businessman is building a maternity clinic on the Bigao's Bubake Island. He tells Ricky Stryak the clinic will provide much-needed care.
As you know, Bubake is one of the islands on the archipelagos of Bigao, one of the 80 islands, and the main problem there is healthcare and the health situation of a population on 30,000 people living on the island is very, very difficult, as Guinea-Bissau, one of the third poor country, and now you live in island is a big problem. And when we're talking about the maternity, it's like it's a red light, like an emergency. And that's the reason we took approach about building the first maternity in Bijagos, because it's very, very necessary to help these people right now, because we have like almost every time someone is pregnant and under condition, they don't have doctors to follow them during the 9 months of pregnancy.
What is the status of the maternity clinic at right now that you guys are building?
Yeah, the status, we are in almost the last phase of it. And we put in the doors, the windows and the ceilings. And then we're going to need, right now we are in the part about putting the doors and the windows. And the next we're going to move to the ceiling and the light and the floor. That's the phase we are on it now.
And so when do you expect to open it up?
Let's say we're looking between January and February.
What been some of the challenges for you in order to build this?
Very, very difficult, because today we can identify what is real, what is not real. And it will become very difficult when even you're trying to say somebody, help me, they will take 2 seconds to stop to see what they're going to help on it. There is no, and the challenge will become when you talk about the island, just to transport the material to the island. And just that is a huge challenge. And now, just even the corporation and then the government and the people, and you become very, very difficult challenge. And there's something like that I never did before is a project that I see deeply in my heart is a must, because if people are screaming for help.
That was Adelino De Castro, a Guinea-Bissau-born boxer who was speaking to Ricky Stryak from New York City. And that is it for this Wednesday, October 31st edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as post editor Samson O'Malley, along with our engineer Greg Burns, I'm James Botti in Washington, wishing you in Africa a very good day.
A recent report from the UN's Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change paints a rather gloomy picture of the future of planet Earth. Hello, I'm Rick Pantaleo. Please join Peter Frumhoff from the Union of Concerned Scientists and me for the science edition of Press Conference USA, when we discuss the report and its possible implications. Listen for it this Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, a look at who really won in the Cameroon presidential election.
Guest host Vincent McCorry discusses Cameroon's newly elected president, Paul Biya, and the election that was marred by violence and low voter turnout. Cameroon politics on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.